everyone, and welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin, and this podcast is dedicated to the failure of comedy. Small failures, not big failures. When people don't laugh, and the comedian thinks, why didn't they laugh? That's me. That's where I come in. And usually I do it about my own jokes, like today. But I have a great guest today, Matt Eisenman. He's the host of American Ninja Warrior, a show that I've grown to really love, just about people being ninjas. That was one of my top goals in life, was to be a ninja. I wanted to be either Richard Marx or ninja. When I played piano and I tried to be loving, people laughed. So I couldn't be Richard Marx, and I'm too tall to be a ninja. And the Asians don't want you in the union. That's all right. He's awesome. So, but before we get to that, I got a couple clips to play, some solid ones, and I got to plug some dates. First weekend of August, I will be in Hyenas, Fort Worth, Texas. First weekend in September, I'll be at the Syracuse Funny Bone. And this Friday, in 2 days, I am driving to Saranac Lake to move with my family to be closer to my brother and to just do a new thing. Very exciting stuff. It's terrifying, not going to lie to you. It's really, really hitting home that we're making this move. I've been in LA so long, but it's the right thing to do. Got to go family first. And I'm obsessed with the smell of my baby's head. You just smell the top of his head and you're like, oh, it's great. But I'm here to tell you that life isn't as bad as you think it is right now. The internet is toxic as shit. And I've been on it more than normal. I've been tweeting a lot more than normal because I've just been hanging with the baby and bouncing him. And he'll just like start yelling or not. He's really chill. But that state of distraction where you're always kind of like slightly distracted is like when you go on Twitter the most. And I've seen some pretty wild stuff. So I wrote this bit, and it's been a work in progress for a couple weeks, but I'd like to share it because it is hopeful. I think we have to stop looking up to celebrities and start looking up to dogs. Enjoy. I love my dogs. They're awesome because they remind you how good life is and how we should celebrate each other. You know, like you see another person, you're like, oh, that guy's on a skateboard. It's like, that guy's wearing khaki fucking pants. We're so similar. Like, you ever see a dog see another dog? They're just walking like, yeah, I'm a dog. And then they're like, no fucking way. Come on, man. What the fucking, we got to go over there. I'm like, why? Why? He's like, because there's another one of me. Right over there, I got to meet this dude. And then the other dog's like, no, fuck, dude. You're like me. We're both dogs. And they look nothing alike. But in their mind, they're like, dude, turn around. Let me smell your asshole. And then they're like, yeah. We're too fucking smart. That's our problem. You know, we overthink our lives. You know, you go online, the world's on fire. You go on your porch, it's just peaceful, you know? We're just like, what is going on? And then you look out, it's just peace. And you're like, I gotta get Geico. Because, like, I get depressed. I'm not judging when I say this shit. I'm saying this from experience. You know, I've gone down rabbit holes where I think everything's falling apart. And then my dog reminds me it's bullshit. I'm like, I don't want to get out of bed. This world has gone mad. My dog's like, I can't believe we're still alive. And I'm like, what are you doing, bro? He's like, I've been staring at you for hours. I'm like, why? He's like, I closed my eyes last night. I thought I disappeared. And guess what? I'm back, and so's my best friend. What the fuck are we going to do today, man? And his tail starts anticipation wagging, like he's not quite ready for it. He's like, I've been hurt in the past, but say the word. Say the word. I'm like, what word? He's like, you fucking know, man. Say it. Say it. I'm like, outside. He's like, yes, yes, I'm gonna smell another one of me.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's good advice. I read a crazy book that I highly recommend and kind of warn you not to read it because it's terrifying, but it's very real. It might give you peace. Like the book Sapiens, I gave the same kind of disclaimer. I'm like, listen, this book will change the way you see the world, but you might want to not know some of the stuff.
It's called Trust Me, I'm Lying to You by Ryan Holiday. It's a look at how the internet works, like how internet blogs and news works. Because we all have now have to admit that the news isn't news. It's not what we used to think the news was. It is entertainment, except it's high stakes and people really die. So this book show, all right, this guy worked for a guy named Tucker Max. He was this everyone was protesting this guy because he came out with a book called I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell. Misogynist, sexist, chauvinist, you know, a real guy's guy, someone I want to have beers with, you know? No, but see, this is the whole point. This guy worked for Tucker Max as his PR person, his media manipulator, that's what he calls it. And he would buy billboards promoting his book, and then he would deface the billboards himself. He would spray paint like, I hope someone cuts your dick off, you sexist pig. They did that on purpose. Because then real feminist blogs, he started leaking. He took pictures and would send it up the blog food chain. And then they started actually protesting him, which ended up getting on CNN, which would have cost them millions of dollars in coverage. And now he worked for American Apparel and did the same thing. It's crazy. And it shows exactly how a half-truth or a straight-up lie or an advertisement can be presented as news. And it's not because there's all these evil people trying to mess with your brain. It's almost worse than that. It's just because of money and clicks. Big data is changing the way everyone operates. It's whatever gets a click. And I love human evolution and history. I'm obsessed with reading books about it, knowing about it. And the way I like to think about why people do the things they do, I like to think we're on the plains of the African savanna, which is where we were 99% of our existence. What makes you run faster and sooner? A lion that's running at you or a banana that you want to eat? Always the lion. Fear is all, outrage is always, always, always going to make you share something more. Studies, countless studies, not just one study paid for by some brand. Study after study after study. If you're outraged, that's what makes you share something. And if something's just good, it's a complete thought, you'll develop a fan. Like you guys are a great fan base because you're like the type of people that enjoy complete thoughts. You enjoy reality. You want to understand your life better. You want to like be better and healthier. And you want the demons to go away. Unfortunately, a lot of people aren't like that. They want that fear, that like, oh my God, did you see what just happened today? Look, how dare this person say that? And that's what gets spread because that's the lion running at them. Now, people will do good things. Like you will dig that irrigation ditch that you need to because you need the water. But you're not going to do it like a lion's coming at you. And the bloggers aren't evil. They just need views. And over time, you know, like 6 easy steps to construct a greenhouse will never get as many clicks as autism in the refrigerator. It just won't, because your love for your child or your, it'll always outweigh the other thing. And I think we see that with this election cycle. The cult of personality isn't even worth the debate. Like, it's not even about the people. It's about the concepts behind them. That's why I don't debate Democrat, Republican, because that's a fluid. That's fluid. That changes. That doesn't mean anything. Lincoln was a Republican. And in the 1960s, the Democrats tried to stop the Civil Rights Bill, the Southern Democrats. Philosophies don't change. Right wing, left wing, that's like a debate. Big government, small government. How much personal responsibility? You know, that is a debate. Stoicism, existentialism, philosophies don't change. Parties change depending on who's giving them money. And you can see the parties change so much that it's almost like college sports, where you know you may have 2 or 3 years with a player before they're gone. It's almost not worth the investment. But yeah, so that book's fascinating. If you want to understand this world and just how it starts to get to know you. So anyway, my point was what Trump represents is unpredictability, pure emotion, almost like a baby or a dog, which is weird because I just did a bit about how I look up to dogs, but it's like he'll just say whatever's on his mind. He wants attention. He acts like he's trying to fuck a girl at a bar. You know, it's like, yeah, I like Pokemon too. Yeah, your dad sounds like an asshole. I hate your dad. Like, you just say whatever will get you in the pussy, you know? And Hillary's the exact opposite. She's like the Amazon ad that knows your Google history and gives you an Instagram ad that is like creepy how well it knows you. Like, I was on Instagram the other day and it literally said sponsored link, greenhouses from Amazon. And that let me know that they knew I was looking up greenhouses the night before. And that freaked me out, even though it was right. That's the Hillary problem, is that people are like, yeah, I mean, your policies make way more sense, but like, how did you know that about me? Like, you're looking at data and you don't have any emotions. Trump, it's like, yeah, you shoot from the hip. Like, you're like me. Like, you get pissed off and you say what's on your mind, but like, that's terrifying as a president. So the fight isn't between two people. It's not between two parties. It's between two concepts of reality. Like, do you want algorithms to make your life safer, easier, better and financially? But you start thinking like, how did you know I was Googling that? And then some people are like, well, yeah, but you've agreed to the terms and services. It's like, you can't function today without agreeing to the terms and services. You can't opt out. There's no chance. If you did a year where you never agreed to terms and services, you wouldn't be able to function. There's a book called Data and Goliath. It's also incredible. Just to show how much big data there is. Like the Ford car company accidentally revealed, like one of their top people revealed that they know how fast you're going and where you're driving at all times. Not that they're spying on you. They do it to make their products better, but they know that. They know exactly how many times you've broken the law as you've been driving. And you never signed that paper. They do use that in a good way. I'm not paranoid. I'm not like, I don't want to like to go into a fucking clean room, but it's creepy. It makes you feel creepy. There's an effect in robotics where a robot people are cool with, like I am a robot, like a big robot. And then a robot that looks exactly like a person, people feel comfortable with. But it's that like almost person makes people very uncomfortable. Like that face that almost looks like the anonymous face, like that group Anonymous, like that like weird face that's like human kind of, but like the mouth moves weird. Like that makes people very, very uncomfortable. And right now we're in that zone of science where it's like, we're starting to know a lot of shit, but not enough to really feel okay. It's like, we're still animals, we're still shit-throwing monkeys, but we know things. Anyway, I wanted to read this email because it really, really hit home for me. And I've been getting a lot of great emails from you guys, so keep sending them. But this one I just really related to personally. I asked him if I could read it. He said, yeah, I'm just going to leave out his name and where he goes to school and whatnot for obvious reasons. But like he said, I want to start this email by saying you're the first celebrity I've ever wanted to contact. Not in a girl who says, I never do this kind of way, but more in the vein that the intimacy of your podcast discussing your move managed to break down a barrier I never quite realized existed. Further evidence of me using your first name, even though you have no idea who the fuck I am, I wanted to let you know what a profound impact your last podcast had on my perspective. First off, this is me talking again, not the email. I'm not a celebrity. I'm like a really, really good comedian who works a lot and is respected, but I'm not a celebrity. No one's following me in the bushes. I still have that freedom. No one gives a fuck about me. All right, anyway. And by the way, I'm not always, that sounded weird. That sounded braggy, but it's true though. I'm a crusher. On stage, I'm a crusher. Online, I'm not great. Because I'm a unity comedian. Like I make people look around and go, yeah, we're all like actually pretty similar. Oh my God, I think I love my wife more. And the wife's like, I understand him. He's really not a piece of shit. And then they leave really happy. That is amazing live, and it sucks online. Read that book. It'll show you. Go on my Twitter, Instagram, anything. I'm not viral. Like, peace isn't viral. Complete thoughts aren't viral. Like, if you make a full statement of sense, no one spreads it. It's all about the half-truth. The gun thing is perfect because half the part of the country lives in cities with trolley cars, and part of the country lives in cities with guns and no cops. So it's almost like that dress. Like, is it a blue dress or a gold dress? It's like people can look at the same issue and have completely different thoughts. And I'm so traveled and I read so much and I think so much about other people that I have a really hard time with half-truths. I see both sides of almost every argument. Not human rights, not gay marriage, not a lot. Like, anytime someone's rights are threatened, like, oh, this group isn't allowed to do this, I always side with the rights. But like all these like little ones. I was doing a thought experiment. Has anyone ever stepped over a homeless person as they were tweeting about gender neutral bathrooms? The answer is for sure yes, and that reveals everything. That we're given these half-truths. Gender-neutral bathrooms. That's the perfect viral. Because if you're against it, it means you don't give transgendered people rights, all the rights everyone else has, and you're wrong. But if you're too for it, it means that you have passed 1,000 problems more pressing than that. Like, I have a baby. If you've ever had a baby like shit his pants in like a movie, like in a Target, actually Target's a bad call. They have great bathrooms, but there's a lot of places where there's no like baby bathrooms. I think everyone starts as a baby. Don't you think there's more of a need for bathrooms for where the baby shit his pants bathrooms? So that's all my point is. It's like, that's the perfect viral. Because it's like, if you're too for it, it means you're delusional. And this is coming from someone who lives in LA. In the entertainment industry. My piano teacher was transgendered. I know a lot of transgendered people. I probably know more than 99.999% just in my daily world. And I still don't know that many of them. And I never once have heard them go, man, I really have to pee. I'm going to have to pee my pants. You want to know who has to pee their pants? Babies. We do have to respect transgendered people and we have to give them all the rights of everyone else. But if you're going to actually start making more bathrooms, there's many other people that need bathrooms. What about bathrooms just for wheelchair people? Because the stalls, people take the big stall. They just will. And then the wheelchair person goes in and the big stall has been taken by some dick who wants more fucking room. What the whole point is, like, the argument that spreads online is the flawed argument. The one where if you're for one side, you're against something else. And if you're for the other side, you're against something else. What does not spread is the full argument, like the police shooting. This will never spread because this is what's reality. The reality of the situation is black people are sick of people not acknowledging that it's bad. That when someone gets shot in the street, the police department never issues a statement that's like, we're super duper sorry. It was definitely bad. And the reason for this is legal culpability. No one knows that more than cops. Your insurance card says never admit fault. Right on it. Never do that. Any lawyer knows that. Any cop knows that. Want to know who else knew that? Catholic Church. Was that a race issue? No, it wasn't. It was money. It's all money. Green Lives Matter. Green. When my friends were getting molested, fucked by priests, no one would say a word because the church wouldn't ever admit it because that's a $1 billion lawsuit. Does the top of the police hate black people? No, of course not. Does the Pope hate children? No. Do they like money? Yeah. Is there racism in the world? Of course. There's every type of ism at every level of the world that isn't the motivator. People are more likely to run from a lion than they are to get a banana. And people feel threatened when they feel threatened. Okay, state troopers are much less likely to shoot people because they're trained and they had to go to college. So they know other cultures. Small town cops, a lot of them are terrified. What if they've never, okay, like Ferguson, Missouri, perfect example. A lot of those cops didn't live in that community. A lot of them probably didn't know black people. So just like, and they act more, they're less Hitler and more Scooby-Doo. Like, oh, geez, Scoobs, is there a ghost? Scooby-Doo. Picture Scooby-Doo. Don't picture Hitler. Scooby-Doo. Now, the problem is if you're way too into cops, then you're disregarding the horrific, horrific things that have happened to black people in America by cops. And if you're too into Black Lives Matter, you're discounting the fact that being a cop is a very hard job. We have to support them, and there's a lot of factors at work. So that thought will never go viral because it's closer to reality, and it doesn't piss anyone off. All it does is make people sad. They go, oh, that sucks. What pisses people off is when someone's like, oh, because you said that, I now have to warn my tribe that like a threat is coming. You hate black people or you hate cops. But both, and the acknowledgement that it's because of legal culpability doesn't go viral. Peace doesn't go viral. But it's great on podcasts. Because just the act of you listening and downloading this and engaging with this means you're the type of person that likes full ideas. And I could be wrong, but at least I'm trying to have a full idea. You know, because when you're part of that monster, that half-truth monster, you can never get off. There's a cliche, is that a phrase? I don't know. I think it's from India that once you start riding the dragon, you can never get off because it'll eat you. Like if you're on the back of a dragon, you're just flying. You're just cruising. But the dragon doesn't see you. And as soon as you get off the dragon, it eats you up. These half-truth virality superstars, the problem is they can't stop once they want to. You can't get off that train. Jennifer Aniston's facing that. She published a really, really thought-provoking and well-written letter about how she wants everyone basically to stop. Like, stop analyzing if she's pregnant. Stop trying to make her feel like a woman has to have a baby to have self-worth. Stop trying to say that every time she's in an argument in a coffee shop that she's going through a divorce, just leave her alone. And that's she's right, of course, but you can't get off the dragon. Think about how many times she's profited from the dragon. Where that half-truth, that like, it's provocative, you know? Like, what happened with Brad and Jen? Like, who is Jen? Like, inside Jen's house, did she really break that glass? Quick, 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 money, 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 quick, 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 money, money, money. And listen, when you're living at that house at the top of the hill, I'm not against rich people, big fan, but just don't ever complain about it. Well, I mean, you can, but just know that that's the parable. You're making a parable that we should teach children. It's like once you get all that, you can't get off. Or it's harder to. I mean, maybe you can, but you just, it's, the more, like, Kim Kardashian can never get off that train. Trump can never get off. Like, he can never be Al Franken now. He can never be, like, a nice senator from Minnesota. Like, he can't do that. He's in that monster. And this isn't new. Julius Caesar had to ride the dragon. Genghis Khan had to ride the dragon. There's a strong argument that the only reason Julius Caesar kept taking over Europe is if he went home, he would be killed. If he stopped gaining more land, he would be killed. There's emotional Ponzi schemes that really crush people. And I'm trying my hardest not to be part of it, but I have a very competitive nature and it's tough for me to walk away from the ring. Anyway, more to the email. Anyway, you referenced, this is really good. You got to hear this. You referenced that you always thought of your career trajectory leading you to the legal profession, but you decided to see what else was out there and obviously have never looked back. I'm currently a law student and have been spending my summer at one of the most safe-zoned, new-age liberal institutions that exist today. I won't, this is me again, I'm not going to say what institution, but it's very legit. Before I went here, I never quite had the experience of not knowing how to interact with new people. I always thought drinks at the bar and a few jokes were the way to make the first connection and sort of find who I was compatible with. Instead, this place feels like a contest of who could have the deepest, most feeling-filled take on a current situation while making sure to use as many sanctioned words as possible.
Sort of like the way sports writers will make increasingly outrageous hot takes on a sports topic to garner more views and conversation. I'm currently realizing that this sort of world is not one I can be a part of. It's bullshit at its very core. It's the perfect storm of entitlement, false intellectualism, and a perverse order where somehow weakness is an advantage. God, this is a good email. A sort of place where humor actually doesn't exist. It's the sort of place where humor doesn't actually exist. I'm not solely emailing you to rant about this, but I wanted to let you know that you are not missing much in the legal world, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on what the optimal way to test one's proclivity for comedy. Open mic nights, YouTube videos? As someone who is 24 but feels like their life is laid out in front of them and now wants no part of it, I wonder where to start. Don't feel obligated to answer any of this nonsense. I just feel that if I devoted my time, the most important and impressive of all my resources, to comedy, or maybe assisting comics, I would enjoy my days far more. So this email degenerated into a half career advice request, half weird personal rambling mess, but the main takeaway is to continue doing what you're doing because it means a lot to a great many people and just might personally inspire me to shake things up. Thanks for a great show. Wow. See, that made my week. I love that email for so many reasons because I faced that. If you want to know what he's talking about, check out my last episode about what made me want to leave LA and what made me not want to be a lawyer and all this stuff. And first off, that problem you're facing right now, you are in the heart of the monster. Again, I'm not saying where you're going, but I know for a fact it is really intense there. But it's like that everywhere. It's really like the nothing and the never ending story. It's spreading, and Hollywood has it horribly. If I make any point that isn't just, we cannot have Donald Trump. If you don't sound like you have a pitchfork in your hand, you're deemed like Adolf Hitler. And I studied the Holocaust in the Czech Republic, living there for a year. My town was the only town who ever took in Jews during the entire fucking war. I'm ethnically part Jewish, raised agnostic. But I was so fascinated by the Holocaust because I couldn't move on without understanding how it could have existed, something so terrible, that I dedicated years of my life to studying it. Donald Trump is nothing like Adolf Hitler. No comparison whatsoever. None. And all these people that keep wanting to do that are ridiculous. And my friend who wrote me this email, what your peers are doing, it's weird. I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's almost not their fault. I'm trying to work on a bit about having empathy for the youth because they do sound like a bunch of, I mean, the ultra left wing is now sound the most privileged. Like, not only are they privileged and rich, they can't hear words. They can't make eye contact. They can't be mansplained. Guess what? The 95 Theses was mansplaining. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream speech was mansplaining. He was a man explaining to people shit. What the fuck does mansplaining mean? That's ridiculous.
I'm starting to like the kids. It sounds fucked up. Like young generation, like college kids. I used to hate them. I hated them. I thought they were weak. I hated them. And now I like them. Because I did some empathy thinking. You know, I'm like, what's it like to be them? Because I don't like that they don't make eye contact, they need safe spaces, everything's offensive. You know, like, I'm 6'7", so I like should have a trigger warning apparently. Like, I'm so big that they're like, you're scary. I'm like, dude, just fucking be strong. You know? But they are strong. I figured out what it was. People my generation, I'm like the oldest millennial, mid-30s, you know, my generation, we weren't raised with all the information. They were. Can you imagine what life would be like if all the info, remember when Obama got elected, within like a year he was completely gray-haired? Like, they took him into a room and they're like, you want to know everything? And they just came out and he's like, fuck! That's the kids. Back in the day, we didn't know anything. Like, you go to a party, someone could just lie. Like, you had to look in their face to see if they're lying. Like, they'd be like, my dad invented boats. And they'd be like, I don't think your dad invented boats, right? He's like, prove it. you know, you can't bring encyclopedias to a party, you know? But nowadays, people are like, your dad didn't invent boats, and I'm about to get my dick sucked out of Tinder. It's like, they don't need to talk to anybody. That's why they don't do that. And it's a scary world, too. That's why they need safety, because back in the day, there was no, like, online porn. Now, most of the internet's porn. You go on to any porn site, it's like, no eye contact hand jobs. You want that category? We had, but that's a category. We had one crinkled piece of a picture of a tip that we kept in the woods on the top of a hill under some leaves. And we called it Spag Mountain. And dudes would just make a pilgrimage up to Spag Mountain. And they'd find the picture and they'd whack to it. And then they would walk down and that's the only time we didn't make eye contact with each other. So I think the kids are doing pretty goddamn well given the situations, you know? Because they can't make mistakes either, because the parents, rightly so, are nervous because we have all the info now. They're like, don't go on the grass, you'll get autism. It's like, what the fuck? Jenny McCarthy just said, grass is autism, so don't go in there. You guys right now are like, it's true. Don't go on the grass. We didn't wear seatbelts. Like, yeah, it's better. You go limp and go through the window.
Recently on Twitter, Chelsea Peretti tried to give me a history lesson in why staying silent is not okay with Donald Trump. No one is being silent. And then hordes of her fucking followers all chimed in like, yes, white man, you listen to Chelsea. And I got none against Chelsea Peretti, but it's like, what are you talking about? Trust me, I'm lying to you. Read that book. Donald Trump's entire marketing campaign is based around idiots like that complaining about him. Adolf Hitler, no. He was a World War I vet with no human empathy. Like, he had courage to a degree that only psychotic people have. He didn't even care about his life, no one's life. He had PTSD so bad he went blind for a month. He never contradicted himself, maybe a few times, but he like knew what he wanted to do. Nationalism, Germany, and they need a scapegoat. Who caused this? Jews. Why Jews? Because they're always kind of on the periphery of society just because they could read during the Dark Ages. Like, the dumbest little factors have made them scapegoats. It's really sad. My grandmother was Czech Jewish, and those people have been through a lot, man. But all I'm saying is, Donald Trump is someone at a bar trying to fuck a girl. You like Pokemon? Your dad sounds like an asshole. That's it. So to compare him to Hitler is fucking outrageous. So yeah, I suggest you go into, just do whatever makes you happy, man. Follow your bliss. And this is a great episode to listen to because listen to Matt Eisenman, because he was a medical doctor before becoming a stand-up comic and now hosting Ninja Warrior. So my man, listen to this, and rate the podcast, comment on it, spread it, subscribe. All that shit matters. My website, hugepianist.com, for tour dates. Support if you can, any way you can, because I'm out here just doing my fucking thing now. I got no safety net, but life is great and very exciting. Much love.
Or they don't want to, and I think having you there helped too, because they probably would have. The fuck yous would have escalated and they wouldn't have.
Yeah, it's all emotional response. Yeah. You see it online all the time, especially politics. Like, no one just is like, the truth is clearly in the middle. Can we just stop responding right. Like mad dogs?
The internet's awful for it, though. There's no tone. There's no sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
There's no back and forth with it.
And the craziest is when you meet them at a party and it's like someone that bashed you and they're like, oh, hey, man, big fan. And you're like,
after a show.
Why did you like bash me?
Or if you reply one tweet to them like, oh, wow, that was not what I meant. And I'm sorry you took that. Like, oh, no, I.
Yeah.
They completely back off.
He's like, dudes like us are living like in a reality where if you say something, it's like you're saying it to someone's face.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why are you saying these things? And then there's a generation that's like, oh, this is just a new game. Yeah. It's called emotions.
It is amazing to me. I think Twitter has been social media in general has been fantastic, and yet has set, I think it's set like real communication back.
Yeah.
Decades.
But it could be great.
It could.
It's almost like newspapers. Like, my dad's a rhetoric professor, so yeah. Like yellow journalism early 1900s, it seems like almost like blogs. Like, they would announce fake wars.
I think I and that's the other thing too. I think when people say we've never been more divided, you look back,
oh, yeah.
Every election cycle, that's the same thing, where people say, we've never been more divided. I think it's just, you always feel it's the most recent now. And the other thing you realize is when you go out and interact with people, for the most part, you're like, yeah, well, you know, you can get along with anyone.
It's so true. Like, we'll do shows, and it's like black, white, gay, straight, tall, short. I think there's more division between height.
Yeah.
Me and you know that. We're tall.
I know.
But it's like, then you go online, and it's just the world's on fire. But then you watch, like, CNN's The 60s. Have you watched that?
Uh-uh.
It's always sucked.
Yeah.
It's always been, like, there used to be machine guns on the White House.
And I think, I think you just, there's also just a narcissism of whatever moment is the most magnified moment, and whatever emotions you're feeling are the most valid emotions and the most heartbroken that you've ever been. Or
I know it. Well, when people hashtag with tragedies is when I start, that's what's making me leave, is because it's not that I love LA. I love the people here. I love like the industry. It's when it started becoming like you're marketing tragedy.
Right.
That like just made me so sad.
And if you didn't, like there was, I can't remember which one it was. There was something that I hadn't heard it. And so I tweeted some stupid joke or tweeted something about whatever, a show or something. And people were like, whoa, bro, maybe you better take it down a notch. Like,
yeah.
I hope you know what's going on. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't react the way you wanted me to. Maybe I do know. And maybe I came here for an escape. And maybe I think other people are.
Right.
But people are telling you how you should be reacting.
Well, I just tweeted today. I said, I came to LA a liberal. I'm leaving a conservative. And none of my opinions have changed.
It's crazy.
Like, when I came here, and I haven't changed. It's like, I'm a liberal person. But now if you're not parroting, like, what is liberal that morning?
Right.
You're like the devil to them.
Right.
And it's like, my piano teacher was transgender. Like, I know that world since the early 90s in Oswego, New York. And it's like, now it's almost like a class thing where if you didn't read today's Huffington Post and know the right term, like today they're called boingo bongos.
Right.
And if you don't say it, you're...
Right.
And it's like...
We just had that. We had that on Ninja Warrior where there's a guy from Alaska who's in a PIAC, in Native American.
Yeah.
And he goes by, he kind of has identified himself as the Eskimo Ninja.
Yeah.
And that's like his Twitter handle and stuff. And so that's been the hashtag on the show. And there were a couple people who were like, hope you know there's division as to whether Eskimo is an appropriate term. You guys shouldn't be using it. I'm like, well, actually, we just deferred to the person who told us, who is of, who's gone through this, who made the determination himself. We're
right.
Honoring his choice.
Oh, well, that's the craziest, is when other people that aren't in the culture make, like, for me, it was one of my buddies, who we both know, but I won't call him out, but he said I wasn't allowed to wear a sombrero.
Oh, yeah.
And he's white.
Right.
The guy's white. And I obsessed over it, because I bought it in Mexico off of Mexican.
Right.
And my son is part Hispanic.
Right.
So I'm like, not exactly a lightweight. And
right.
And I'm like, It's so much more racist to think that like that's their hat,
right?
Or like
right,
yeah.
You get that to that point where honestly would be I just look at it as a hat,
right? And then
I'm less racist for that.
No, 100%. And my bit ends up being that if anyone needs a sombrero, it's white people because the sun hurts our skin. And I'm like, and the joke is that life is so funny that the whitest people wear the smallest hats. Jews, yarmulkes. So I propose Mexicans and Jews switch hats. That's how we end skin cancer.
Hilarious.
You know, because when you look at it like objectively, almost like you're slightly on the spectrum, it's like everything just becomes obvious.
Right.
Like my physics buddies. I do a physics podcast, and a lot of them like they'll be like, what's that?
Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah,
Caitlyn
Jenner got Woman of the Year, but she hasn't been a woman for a full year. It's like, that's mathematically incorrect. And because they just go right around the outrage.
And that's what's about, if you really just try to be, but I think the problem is a lot of times you'll try to argue facts and you realize people argue emotions.
Yeah.
And so when you come at it with facts, it doesn't matter how right they are. Like studies show people will actually dig in more.
Yeah, they reinforce
when presented
it
with
yeah.
facts. And I think it really puts you in a difficult situation. I think that's what's awful about online is that you can't look someone in the eyes and go, hey, just so you know, I'm trying to relate to you on this.
Yeah.
They might they can take the tone completely, however
they assume
antagonistically.
Worst.
Right.
Especially
I think
like dudes like us, like white dudes over 6'4", like we're screwed. Everyone,
yeah.
like we could say, hi, how you doing? And they think we're like, how's you doing? Like we're like Germans.
Right.
You know, like literally it's the worst possible. And I'm like, I like... comics are inherently kind of underdog dudes. Like,
right.
Where do you think we're coming from? Right. We weren't, like, giving you wedgies.
Right.
Like back off.
I think it is interesting. Like, I've never been that controversial with my comedy. And
me neither. That's why I'm like, that's why I say I came a liberal and I'm leaving a conservative, because it's like, I'm the traffic dogs relationship comic.
Yeah.
And people are like, they'll see a dog joke and see racism in it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm talking about, like, dogs, like, animals.
You just don't see it, bro.
You just don't see what you're saying. You're privileged. You're privileged.
And it's one of those things where you try to be, okay, I'm gonna take this in.
Yeah.
And see it, and yet I feel like genuinely, I don't like the same thing with the Ninja Show, where we've had some women have some great performances, and so we'll say a fantastic performance for women, and women are like, that's so degrading that you would point it out. Like, well, the only reason, you know, you're aware that she did well is because we pointed it out.
Right.
And we're trying to celebrate it. This is a sport where men and women compete together. And
I love the show.
And thanks. But yeah. The thing that drives me nuts is you just hate when someone accuses you of you're being sexist or something. When you're like, wow, I'm genuinely making an effort here to be thoughtful. Like, we talk to the female competitors and we check in with them. We're like, hey, are you guys cool with the way we talk about your performances and we are celebrating it? And to a person, they've said it's okay. And you realize it's so hard when you start trying to anticipate what
that's
when you're people
on
extremes
yeah.
are going to say or what they're going to find fault with. Because you can always find fault with it. Like, if you point it out or you don't point it out, they could assume malice in either one.
Yeah, it's almost like you're living defensively, and that's when you're almost the worst.
And I don't like that feeling, and I don't like it in comedy. And that's one of the things that, like, again, as being someone who's completely, for the most part, you know, self-deprecating humor.
Yeah, you're one of the nicest people.
But I totally, I don't understand why every comic doesn't stand up to support other, like Nicole Arbour, I thought was a great example when she did that fat person video. And it's like, whatever your take is on it as a comic, you should say, hey, we want to be able to talk about any topic.
Right.
Her intention is clearly to be funny. Maybe she has a message in there. But as a comic, you start saying, well, if this topic gets proscribed, then what's next? And you think it's South Park. Either everything is fair game or nothing is.
Totally. And it's like, we have to be able to make mistakes. Like, we have to, it's like surfing.
Oh, my God.
Because it's like, our job is we have to, like, get it to people feel like, wow, this is a little interesting, but not, it's like, you're not fall off the board. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's what's interesting about this podcast. And to me, the first time I really was aware of people kind of introducing the concept that a joke is something that's a living organism was Comedian. With Seinfeld.
Yeah, I love that.
Seeing him, like, take a joke and develop it. And I think it's an interesting point where comedians need to be able to go on stage and say something completely wrong. And then, okay, that way maybe it didn't come out right and that was offensive. But then to say I'm going to harness it
yeah.
and develop it and work it until I convey the point the way I see it in my head.
Yeah.
And nothing, you know, at this point people are expected to have every joke fully formed. And if you have a sentiment that, well, I worded that wrong, I see why that didn't get a laugh. And ultimately, to me, it should still be, did people laugh?
Right. We're trying to make people laugh, and if they don't, sometimes it's because there's something happen. Like, it's like what you said, like, you don't know something. Like, when I said, did you watch 60 Minutes, 7 Days, that documentary I did?
When you started just going on the road nonstop?
I tried to write a full hour in a week, and I showed me and my wife, talking about the Armenian joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, then all things are offensive, like werewolves offend Armenians. And she was like, I can see women, and I didn't even think women could be offended.
Right.
So I changed it to Armenian men, and then no one cared.
Right.
And it's like, because I've never waxed my upper lip like my wife has.
Right.
So I don't even know that insecurity even exists.
Right.
And it's like, sometimes comedians can either be like full-blown narcissists or almost not exist.
Yeah.
And I'm more on the non-existent side where I'm like, tell me what the world is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
And the thing, you're like, I'm trying to convey this point. And you telling me that allows me to better convey the point.
Right.
So everyone gets on the same page. And that's, I think it's what's made it really tough to be a comedian. And I've noticed it, social media, I think it's probably more magnified because they don't get any context of your full act or see your reaction to the crowd reacting or not reacting. And I think it just, it becomes tougher as a comedian to joke about things.
Yeah, online's killing it because it's like live, it's like you can be so good and then online it doesn't translate.
It doesn't.
And I realized one of the...
And people would just retweet this thing with no context, or your, you know, the two emails before that, or tweets before that set it up. And so we actually had a producer on American Ninja Warrior who, I think it was after Orlando or something, where he tweeted, it was something to the effect of, although it could be said that the good guy with the gun may have wanted to kill Donald Trump. And clearly, you know, just a joke about he's saying Trump is whatever, pro-guns, whatever. It was a joke.
Yeah.
People started going, this guy advocates the murder of a presidential candidate. And all these things where you're like, do you not see the attempt at humor?
Well, the sick part is they do see it and they don't care. Yeah. That's what I'm starting to realize, why I think that there needs to be a serious like redo, because they know that. Like, they'll take it out of context and be like, oh, this one sentence will really screw this person. Because all it is eyeballs. It's not even malicious.
Right.
It's you just follow the money. You know, like, you have all these Lives Matter things, but in the end, at the top, it's green. It's just always green.
Right.
And it's like, how do you get eyeballs? And it's always half-truths. It's the perfect thing. Beyonce's halftime thing was the most brilliant possible move, because Black Panthers are racist, kind of. But they also had to be, kind of.
Right.
So it's perfect because it's a flawed half.
Right.
So now every fight, every comment, everything is a click, click, click.
Right.
And it's like, it's perfect, because if you say it's offensive, then you're not honoring the struggles of the 1960s civil rights movement.
Right.
And if you're too into it, then you're saying like, it's okay to hate white people.
Right.
It's perfect.
Right.
And that's like how it all goes now.
Right.
And it's like, peace doesn't go viral. I was like tweeting about that. I'm like, peace will never go viral, because when you feel it, you just sit and you go, okay.
It's so true, though. I think you know, we see it. I think you ask any comic, if you see 100 tweets going, you're great, you're amazing, that will be outweighed by one tweet going, I think you suck and you should never be allowed to tell a joke again. And it's like a knife where you go, why do they hate me so much?
No, I'm telling you, it's the plains of Africa. The fear of the lion is a lot more powerful than wanting the banana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I was thinking about that today, because I'm not, like, judging people. I'm the same way. It's like, I saw, like, how am I driving with those stickers? I'm like, how many times has anyone called to say they're driving well?
Right.
Like, he's doing a really good job. I just saw a lane change.
It's Yelp. It's the internet where, you do one customer well, they tell two people. You serve one badly, they tell 20 people.
Right.
And it's just anger. The satisfaction of, I'm going to tell it, and I've done that. Where you are, this service is awful. I'm going to tweet. I mean, you see it. Anytime a plane is delayed, comics like, never fly American again.
I know. It's
I was
so
just doing
fun.
That in Denver.
Oh, constantly. I do it all the time. The only people I've ever trolled ever is airlines and Piers Morgan. Those are the only people ever. Because I never, and Men's Humor briefly, but that was a joke, though.
That was funny.
Yeah, it was just basically, I wasn't actually mad at him. I was just like showing how, like, if viewed through the lens of depression, like, it's just all very depressing.
Mm-hmm.
But Piers Morgan just bothers me. But other than that,
but I think he knows he's a guy who always plays the antagonist.
Yeah, he gets
it, and he gets it. He gets and what's interesting, though, is I think by all accounts he shouldn't like Trump, but you know, he had the Apprentice interaction with him, and he's been very loyal to Trump. And it's interesting because there's a guy who you just see crucify.
Guns. He hates guns.
Guns. And most, I think most, or a lot of politicians, I think, you know, he, again, I think you see more of him when he's taking a negative tact, but.
Yeah, I just
again, it's probably the same thing.
For me,
he probably does celebrate a lot of them, but you ignore those. You see the ones where he's.
I just, but it's just because he's British, and whenever he makes fun of America, I get real pissed off.
Yeah.
That's how it's.
It's interesting. I think that's what Trevor Noah kind of went through with The Daily Show initially, where the feeling of. I think any group kind of feels like, okay, tell us how shitty we are. But when it's an outside, it's like a family.
Yeah.
No, I can make fun of my brother.
Oh,
you can't make fun of my brother.
Exactly. And I've been impressed by Trevor recently with how he handled shootings, where he's like, you can be pro-Black Lives and pro-cops.
Yeah.
And I was like, that way to go.
Way to be reasonable.
Yeah, that's true. And because that's how I feel. That's how a lot of people feel. Where it's like, cops aren't monsters, and Black people deserve... like all the rights, like that's most, but somehow it's gotten that division.
Yeah.
And it's just, but that's just what sells newspapers.
And I definitely think that when you also, like you're saying, when you kind of go to that point of the spectrum, when you start looking at media and you realize news doesn't really exist to give us information, particularly now with social media where you can find it in so many different sources. I think it's clicks, it's views, it's entertainment. They have to get viewership and they have to know who's watching them. And, you know, most people I think are more comfortable kind of hearing things presented through a lens that reflects their world. And so that's why I think you kind of see these different news areas that have staked out, you know, the conservative, the liberal, libertarian. And I think you realize, as you start to see one story that could be presented four or five different ways, you're like
that dress. Remember the dress?
Yeah.
Was it blue?
That's
or was it. Yeah.
I think
that was
that's
the most profound thing I've ever seen.
And especially, I think, when you work with words and you hear how someone, just the statement of a headline, you can see how that person feels about the story.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, unarmed teen shot or whether it's person committing felon gunned down by a real cop. It's the exact same story, just depending on what lens you're looking through.
I want to do a series of parodies where it's like a picture of Martin Luther King Jr. and it's like, black man escapes to mountaintop to avoid cop, you know, where you can lens anything. Like,
right.
Mahatma Gandhi steals salt from ocean to avoid taxes.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's
right.
Like, imagine some of these people now.
What fish drying up.
Yeah, totally. It's like how to fearmonger with these, you know, like Mr. Rogers or something. You know, like, take the obvious
old
icons.
Man concerned with kids spends all day talking to them.
Yeah, playing with trout. Yeah, it's like steals treat and clearly won't eat it later. You know what I mean? It's like Cookie Monster makes kids fat. I mean, that probably happens.
Right.
It's like, and it didn't used to be that way. Sometimes I do the curmudgeon check where I'm
right.
like, am I just reminiscing back when I felt younger? You know?
Right.
Like, and then it's like, no, because newspapers had brands. That's the selling was that you trusted them. Where
right.
it's like, as soon as they did something false, you're like, I'm going to get another newspaper.
Right.
Now the only accountability is clicks, and they can just switch all the time.
Yeah,
no,
Brian Williams coming back on the air. And you kind of feel like, for a news person, where you have to have trust in their inherent moral compass, and to feel like, you know, he exaggerated his story and told him multiple times, it's really hard to look at him and not see that.
Right.
But then you also realize it's really a person who delivers the news well. You know, he's a smooth, stentorian voiced guy, and you're like, oh yeah, of course.
Walter Cronkite was the most trusted man in America. Like, that's amazing. And now news people are seen as like scumbags.
Yeah. I mean, Dan Rather with the George Bush, where they had those documents that they didn't check, that they'd said, you know, falsified his military record, and it just crucified his career. And now, and I think it was, I think we're now more tolerant of it. I think it's all kind of the wink-wink of, we know there's, you know, they're not Walter Cronkite anymore. And who knows? Who knows what he might have
been exposed. Oh, 100%. Can you imagine Sinatra when there was TMZ?
Yeah.
Or like Babe Ruth?
Right.
Babe Ruth probably like killed hookers.
Right.
Like, these dudes are maniacs.
It's crazy. It is, and it is, I think it's tough too for people who truly are constantly under public scrutiny, what it must be like, where every interaction someone has with, I remember I was at a Dodgers game and I was in the bathroom and Tom Hanks walked in. I'm like, holy fuck, Tom Hanks.
Right.
And then I'm like, to him, it's just a piss. And to
me,
it's a story I'm still
it's
telling.
A Tom Hanks
10
piss.
Years later, right?
Yeah.
What it must be like to be someone where your every move is scrutinized. Like, I think it just has to be exhausting.
I remember in like 06, Adam Sandler said, he was like, the camera phone's the worst thing that ever happened to me. Because it's like, you don't even think about what it's like for these dudes, where it's like, before it'd be like, oh, Adam Sandler. And then it's like, oh, we're now all documentary journalists.
Yeah.
Like, and
dude,
publishers.
I went to VidCon, which is like the kind of E3 convention for content creators like YouTube and Insta, all these young, and it's, you know, all high school, young college kids. And we're there, and the Try Guys walked in from BuzzFeed, who I've seen, hilarious guys, very funny, cool videos. Their videos get lots of hits, but they walked in and it was like the Beatles entered. The entire room just starts screaming. Every phone comes out.
Right.
And there must be 1,000 videos of these guys just walking in, doing their thing and leaving. And it's just amazing looking at, like you said, now, I mean, we're Big Brother. We document everything. We volunteer all these details of our lives and put them out there.
Dude, I just read this book, Data and Goliath. It's actually like, to a degree that is terrifying. Like, how all the metadata that's out there about every person. And it's like, the NRA isn't looking at us individually, but they're looking at us as a group with patterns so intensely that, right. And the problem is that's the one draw I see in Trump. I think he's a jackass, but like his lack of predictability,
right?
Because I think people are so sick of being predicted where right. It's like, stop telling me what I'm going to buy at Target.
Right.
I want to see someone that's going to say something that you cannot predict today. Right. And I think that predictability of big data is suffocating people.
And, yeah.
Did you mean blah, blah, blah? It's like, no, my name's Owen. I didn't mean to say own.
Right.
Stop guessing own.
Right. I want to talk to a person. Tell yeah. me. It is. I think you do. It's, it was a Bob Seger song, I Feel Like a Number.
Totally.
And you just, I think it does get magnified. You really are. I have some friends who do that data analysis stuff where they've
got
opt-in email things, and they're like, we know what you want to buy, when you want to buy it, what size, what your color preference is. We know everything, and you gave us permission.
Yeah.
Like, oh, fuck.
I wanted to write a book where it was called Opted Out, where for one full year I agreed to nothing online and how I would have to basically live like a caveman.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't agree to service, like...
Well, Louis C.K. told a story where he did, you know, he did his special on his website. And when you bought it, he had a mailing list. And it was, he actually had a default to opt out. So you had to click opt in to get on his mailing list.
Yeah.
So not only did you have to go buy his special, so you're already a customer of his, you had to click to opt in on his mailing list. And he said the first one he sent out, he had like a 50% unsubscribe rate. And it was like, you know, here's another special for $5 or something, where it's just like, wait, you guys are my fans.
Right.
You bought something of mine. I'm offering you something else. And still 50% of people are like, fuck, how dare you market to me?
God damn, yeah.
And it's this amazing feeling of, at this, we love the convenience of having, you know, Uber show up. But yeah, I want to go home, or I'm ordering the same thing from Postmates. But at the same time, you just realize it gets that creepy feeling of you're being monitored.
Yeah, and you want more autonomy. You're just like, but you also have, you'd miss the power of being able to swipe everything though. Like, that's the thing. We're in this weird like limbo of like, we're almost robots, but we're still monkeys.
Well, they were just saying that Google and Facebook are now, they're unique. Like, if we do a search for a same term, we won't get the same results because it's all based on your previous search history, your computer, where you're searching.
Yeah, two episodes ago.
Did I hear it on your show?
Google guy.
I heard it on your show. See, I'm quoting your facts to you. That's how insidious it is. But that was one of those
ones. I researched that highly.
But I remember, because I remember it was the same thing they said. It's why I stopped using Orbitz, where they said if you had a Mac, the rates were higher. Because they figured you were more affluent.
I think that's one of the reasons people are so trigger happy about racist now, is because the whole world is now so ist. That, like, we're reacting in our personal lives when it doesn't exist, where it's like, Facebook, Google, all these things break you down. Like, how do you think they market things that are for certain communities? Like, I'm not going to make any claims, but they know exactly what they're doing. Where it's like, they will market every single aspect of you. It's like, okay, we're going to sell people who watch the show House Cadillacs.
Right.
And we're going to sell KFC on the NBA.
It was your joke. Were you talking about when you search, like, what makes me happy or whatever? And it is sad because you also realize the only reason these businesses, anything exists, is to make money.
Right. It's not insidious. It's not like they're trying to ruin our lives. Yeah. In fact, they're trying to make them better. But it's the unexpected consequences.
Well, I think it's because you assume there's no, I don't know, you assume there's no malice, or you assume that it's impartial.
Right.
And when you see that it's being manipulated, I think, you know, you tend to feel it's malicious, or that. But in the end, it's like Big Pharma. So, you know, people are not fans of Big Pharma. But I have rheumatoid arthritis, and so I went on a drug. I was diagnosed in 2002, and the drug only came out in like 98, 99. And before that, the treatments were not good. Side effects were horrible, and I've responded very well. And it's because they'd spent, you know, hundreds of millions developing this very specific drug, and so. When you talk about Big Pharma shouldn't make any money, to me, I see the other side of, but if they don't make money, they're not going to make these amazing drugs that change my life.
Absolutely.
And so it's this catch-22 where you want everything to be abundant and to be everyone have access to it, but you realize when you start thinking about like our comedy or something, if everyone's like, well, I want to get all your material, I'm like, okay, well, it's a special. No, I'm just going to download it for free. And I'd say, wait a second, I need you to pay for that because I have to make money because I've worked right. so hard on this.
It's like, but I want it.
I want it. I know. Why can't I have it?
I was trying to work out a bit about whoever got the rainbow for gay rights was like the best negotiator in history, where it's like, all right, so we got green is going to environmentalists. They're like, we want that color. And it's like, for some reason, he was Southern.
Right.
And he just keeps...
Well, you can do a Southern voice.
Yeah.
If you did a gay voice, you'd get you're in trouble. Dick.
Yeah, and the irony is, it fits Southern more because it's right. this, like, dude who won't, like, listen to reason.
Right.
Where he's like, okay, well, red is AIDS, right? It's like, we want red, too. It's like, orange is gun. It's like, orange.
Right.
It's like, we want all the fucking all colors. Of it. Give me all the colors, man. I want all the fucking visible light.
I was just watching Zootopia on,
I watched Zootopia.
Kids cartoon.
Yeah.
And they had, like, the little bully was Southern. And you're like, oh, that's safe.
Oh, yeah.
It was safe to have the little bully fox.
Or German. German Southern. Or Southern.
German or Southern, yeah.
That's always what it is.
It's funny, because my sister-in-law is German, and she's very, you know, the Germans are very cognizant of their history and not appearing to be... bossy. And,
yeah, they're almost like over the top about like, Zoo can take your shoes off if you want. But definitely do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're almost just really good at efficiency and it just backfired hard.
Right. Right.
Like they're just
went a little too it. They took it a little too far.
Yeah, they're just really good at being awful. They're really good at doing everything and then they're really good at
being a monster. Pointed that machine at something bad.
Way bad.
Yeah,
So you were in medicine. Like, what made you do that shift? Because that's amazing.
It's funny. I think kind of growing up, my parents were kind of high achievers too. My dad's a doctor, and my mom was like Phi Beta Kappa in her college, and then she was a mom. But it was never like you have to be a doctor. It was just do well, work hard,
right.
be as good as you can, and you know life will work out. And so I think I kind of, it's funny, as I got into college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I was a sophomore, my brother was a senior, he graduated and he kind of hit the realization of, he took a year off because he didn't know. He was a history major and nothing had really grabbed him and he didn't want to go do finance like 80% of his classmates did. And he took a ski bum year and that was when I kind of realized I have 2 years to figure out what I want to do. And I loved sciences. I was good at science, and I liked people, like being around people and helping people. And I'm like, so started looking at medicine. And my dad was a doctor, and he never pressured me, but I looked at him, and I respect my dad tremendously. And I saw the satisfaction he got from his job, and I think the respect. And I thought it's a great profession. It's not going anywhere. So it's kind of one of those things. On paper, it was the perfect fit. And so I did all the pre-meds and did really well, and got into med school, and enjoyed the intellectual challenge of it. And always kind of felt like, all right, when I get into it, I think I'll find the passion behind it. I mean, I love the challenge of it, but as I got into it, I think when I was doing residency, and I just, it was like working one night, and I realized, heck, in like 6 months, I was going to be a second year, and I was like, now I was going to be making life or death decisions for people. And you'd have backup, but like, you know, you have to make choices. And I was an intern, and so it's still like you ran everything by your second year. And I was like, God, I didn't feel passionate enough about it. Cause like I would finish 36 hours in the hospital and I would want to go sleep, drink, ski, do anything other than go do, hey, you know what? My patient had this really rare myeloma. I need to look up more on it and figure out the latest treatments and do all the research. And I just felt like, I just realized my heart wasn't in it. And so I thought about switching from internal medicine to emergency medicine. And you kind of have to do academic years, take a year off. And I'd done stand-up a few times in medical school, and I thought, I'm just going to take a year and do something totally different and just kind of clear my brain, hit the reset button. And so I moved out to L.A. and didn't know anyone, just got the L.A. Weekly and started going to open mics and bombing. But I was so happy. I was so happy being on stage.
Yeah, if you're happy in failure, that's when you know you're in the right
spot. Yeah, and I felt when I was on stage, I just felt like I came alive and like, this is what I was meant to do, was to be performing and in front of people. And I was lucky enough, I got into commercials. So I was making more money than I was as a doctor.
Isn't that crazy when that happens?
It's insane. I mean, you know, as an intern, you're making subsistence level wages and so, and commercials paid well, but it was just,
But when you follow your heart, and it also pays off financially.
But thank God, and thank God that, you know, I was single, and my grandparents had helped some with medical school, so the debt wasn't crushing to the point where I'm like, I can at least do a year. And to get out here and then realize, like, how great it is to do something you're passionate about.
Totally.
And like, I tell people, our job is not getting on stage or being in front of the camera. Our job, that's the fun part. Our job is getting the jobs.
Right.
It's the months and years where the phone's not ringing, or, you know, your material's not going well, or no one cares about your jokes, when you're just like, that's when you gotta, that's the work.
Right.
Everything else, like, whenever you're performing, it's amazing.
I was gonna do a show called Downtime, where it's all the shit not on stage.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's where comics can either go crazy.
22 hours. I mean, there have been countless times when you're in a city eating at a Denny's going, what the fuck am I doing?
You're just staring into space.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, sometimes after shows, like, I'll be, like, hanging with the crowd and everything, and I'm like, and they're just like, oh, wow, you're so, like, talkative and you love people. I'm like, I haven't talked to a human in 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, I've just been in a tube in a sky. I talked to the Avis guy for a second. Like, it's like, you're just alone.
It's crazy. And I think that's, you know, the clubs, I haven't done clubs much, and it's so hard to do. I mean, and I'm not a big draw still. The shows are doing well, but I'm not a draw. And when you go out and you're like, you know, you're...
There's like 10 people that are draws.
Right. And what's crazy is, like, I mean, already, as I look at it, I make less in absolute money in clubs now than I did, like, 8 years ago. They just, clubs paid more.
Yeah.
And it's crazy where, unless you hit, like, attendance bonuses, which a lot of times I don't.
Yeah.
And it's depressing when you're like, sorry, the second show on Friday is canceled because you had, like, 7 people. And you're like, oh, my God.
Dude, I got a story. So, Kevin James, like, the third year he was on King of Queens, it said, like, he sold out in Chicago Improv, and he was like, oh, this is great. And then he realized it was, like, a bunch of gay people thought that he was, like, the King of Queens. Like, even, like, then, obviously, he started selling out huge, but even, like, 3 years on a sitcom hit, it's like, you still didn't get that big crowd.
It's crazy. I mean, I think the people who've really started to pop, I think podcasts have been a great forum.
My main draw is the podcast.
To me, there's such an intimacy to it where, I mean, like, when I listen to the podcast and I've enjoyed yours, you feel like it's a conversation with friends that you just can't talk back to.
Yeah.
And I think you'd mentioned it too, where people have this such a sense of familiarity with you because they feel like they've been a part of your conversations in your life.
And it's honest.
Yeah.
Like, nothing ever goes, like, viral, like, in a bad way. Mm-hmm. Like, in one of my first podcasts I re-listened to recently to give myself a pep talk, I didn't want viral. Like, I want people to have to walk up a hill a little bit, just enough where it's not an easy attack.
Right.
So that if I say something that's a little, you know, nuanced, and I might be wrong, but I believe it at the time, like, I don't want to have a swarm of bees attack me.
Right.
Because, like, those angry borderline personality people on Twitter don't ever take the time to download podcasts.
Right.
So you have a higher quality audience.
Right. You have your audience.
Yeah.
Which is what you want with comedy, is it's always the difference of when you do have that time when people have come out knowing you to see you and to hear your thoughts on things.
It's like, that isn't funny. It's like, you're 9.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what is funny to you. Like, it's like, we can't, and that's one reason why, like, a lot of these comedy movies are getting less funny. It's not their fault. It's just they have to appeal to China now. What? They have to appeal to, like, almost non-English speaking
countries.
What
was the Sandler's latest one, the Sinister Six or whatever thing, where just before it came out, all the controversy with it, and, you know, if you looked at Blazing Saddles, if that were made today.
Oh my God, dude, all of them. Like, watch this Billy Crystal and Throw Mom from the Train. He's like, you're a slut, you're a slut, you slut. You're like, what?
And I think it's what you'd said too about how you become a liberal and become a conservative. Like, Sandler, I don't know that his sense of humor has necessarily changed. It's that everything else has changed around it. Like, if you look at his movies, he probably has a very similar sensibility. It's just now people are looking to find fault with that.
It's crazy.
It's tough. I think it's got to be tough to do comp. You know, like the Ghostbusters, how some people are condemning it because it's all women, and other people are saying it's going to be great because it's all women, and people hadn't seen it. But people are passing judgments on it.
Yeah, it's literally, I tweeted the other day, I go, the Ghostbusters didn't ruin your childhood, a lot of other things did.
Right. And that's I hate that too, where like all these sites are in such a hurry to be the first to say whether a movie's a success or failure. So they'll do, well, based on Thursday's midnight showings, we're estimating what's going to happen the entire weekend, and you know, you pronounce it dead on arrival, and you're sitting there and you realize, though, like, if you see all the negative press, it can influence you where you see, oh, this movie sucks. Like, oh, I guess people don't like it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, it's probably, you know, a few thousand people who've seen it and, you know, a few critics who've weighed in. It's just amazing how there isn't much, I don't think there's much leverage in being reasonable and taking the middle of the road.
Peace doesn't go viral.
If you look at, I mean, Howard Stern, they used to say that people who love the show listen for an hour, people who hate it listen for three.
Yeah.
Because there's sometimes you like hate watching or hate listening to things.
I follow Piers Morgan.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then you complain and he's like, well, just unfollow me. Yeah, no! Because I love.
I want to do a picture, like a meme where I'm just like, my nose is next to a wall, but it's like far away. And I'm like, back in my day, the world wasn't just one wall.
Right.
Where it's like you choose your own cage.
Oh my God. It is amazing how when you, who was, Ari Shaffir talked about that when he
love
had
Ari Shaffir
with Damian Merlina in his special where he name checked her and, you know, it was, people were just up in arms. And he said, you know what I did? I turned off Twitter for a week. And he's like, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, all the things, I didn't look at it. I just went about my life.
Yeah.
And then I came back a week later and people had moved on.
So true.
And he's like, you know, it's a thing of you, can, you know, and even if he said, even if I wanted to defend myself, you don't answer the door when a mob is there with pitchforks and burning stakes.
No, you don't not say, there to talk. I'm not a witch. Yeah. I'm clearly just a woman.
Right.
Like, don't right. burn me. Like, that would that's what a witch would say.
But
like,
it's that same thing where sometimes we do it. You're mad and you're like, you keep hitting refresh on Twitter.
Yeah, that's why Trump is such a marketing genius, because it's like, he's the troll king. Where it's like he's like taking that culture and turning it on itself. Yeah. Where it's like, keep attacking me.
Well,
that's the whole point.
You saw it out of all the other candidates who were looking for the nomination, where they didn't know how to react. I mean, I think they felt every statement, starting with the building the wall for the Mexicans and the Muslims, they all felt this is the one that's going to end him.
Right.
And instead, as people kind of said, oh, he may have a point, or it's a, and then they started, you saw them trying to backtrack from saying this is unacceptable to, well, I agree, we do need to control immigration, but they didn't know how to react, because I think it's what you said, where they were used to traditional politics, where you don't make these bold statements and you...
All his power came from the Rosie O'Donnell comment.
Yeah.
That's when everyone was like, because that one was kind of right. Yeah. Like, he felt attacked and he just attacked her. Yeah. And everyone's like, that's what I'd do in the backyard. And then after that, he just went on to just.
But it's
keep...
the thing, if you can't apologize. Who Joan Rivers was, I think, one who just said, "I'll never," you know, you have to apologize. No.
Yeah, never.
Well, people don't know what to do, and
yeah,
and I think it's you know, one of the hardest things. I'm a pleaser, so again, when I sense I've upset someone, I'm always trying to make it right, and you realize then they have the power, and you know, if they want, they can kind of make you dance on the marionette strings. And it's like, wow, you really, it's hard to have kind of a civil exchange with someone if you don't know them, and if you're trying to do it online where people aren't governed by the same rules that you would with a friend, an interaction with someone. And so if you go into it kind of feeling like that's going to be the exchange, I think you get burned.
I mean, look at how many people had like a very nuanced opinion of British leaving the European Union
right.
the day it happened. Like, they didn't know what it was.
Right.
And they're like,
Lindsay Lohan.
I made $300 on that because right. I knew that the pound was going to rebound.
Right.
I just bought pounds at an airport. Because right. it's like, it drops so hard from emotions that
right.
I'm like, this has to have a slight rebound. It's like
right.
a fact. And it doesn't even matter. The fight isn't about racism. Is the world two-dimensional or five-dimensional? Do lines and dirt matter? That's the whole fight.
Right.
Like, there's groups of people. It's not that they hate brown people. It's like, is a border anything? And it's like, they don't understand multinationals. We're like, you can be a citizen of Google.
Right.
Like, that concept doesn't... There's certain people that just don't see the world that way.
Right.
They're like, there's a line. It's a map. And other people are like, a firewall is bigger than a real wall.
Right.
You know? And it's like, that's the fight. But somehow they make it about skin because that's what sells. There's this primal thing about it.
And that's what's interesting, I think, is you look at Facebook or something, and if you don't realize how your information feed may be manipulated or not manipulated, but tailored to
you.
And that it can, you know, the echo chamber of when you follow people you like, you know, you may have one or two Piers Morgans, but you know, by and large, if you have a group of like-minded people, you're not hearing anyone.
And that's why you're so outraged when you see when you like, someone's like, oh, I kind of like Trump. You're like, how dare, but right. If you really know that, you know, 40% of the country kind of feels that way, right. Like, but you never hear them. So that's right. Why it's like, this one in a thousand, like you think they're an anomaly when really it's like not.
And I think it's so unhealthy to not be challenged and to not have your ideas challenged and to not have like or at least an attempted civil exchange of ideas.
Yeah.
Like the only way you get, I think your ideas get stronger, your beliefs get better, is having them challenged and hearing someone who has a different point of view and saying, okay, you've made me understand your point of view and you've changed the way I think. And whether I come onto your side or not, you probably modified my thoughts on it. And I don't know how much that happens.
I had a joke that came from a real conversation when this black dude was like, but you don't know what it's like to be black. And I was like, you don't know what it's like not to know what it's like to be black. And then we laughed. Because it's like, no one knows what it's like to be anything. And conversation enders are racist, sexist. You're done. Now you're now backpedaling. And the more you backpedal, the more you look like whatever you were just called. So if you stay away from those terms, it's like you can talk. But people just, they shut it down. Then you're racist. Like, an economic move in England makes you racist. Like, that may be a bad economic decision, but how is that racism? It's crazy.
It is. And it is weird how impassioned we become about it, about something that probably 3 days before wasn't on your radar.
No. And England's been complaining about the EU for 20 straight years.
Right.
Because, you know, Greece is like a clinger.
Right.
Like, it's not as cut, like, it's obvious that they did that. I personally think it was not a good move economically, but it's not what people made it into, where it's like, it's because of Muslims. It's like, they make way more money than the other countries.
Right. God, I think I'm quoting you to you. Were you the one who said, like, somebody said, it's like you went out to dinner and Greece ordered a steak and lobster and you had, like, French fries. And like, what was the
gross wedding, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, what they're sacrificing is the ability of, like, you know, crossing national boundaries for multinational companies. But everything else, it was clearly the right move.
Right. And yet, I'm sure that the companies will still find
they'll
a way
be
out,
fine.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool, man. This has been awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Owen.
Matt,
it's
man.
Fun. I'm clearly listening to your podcast.
I love that.
It's been, you know what's been fun, though? It's fun, like, having known you a long time. And you're one of the few, I think, who's grown up. Like,
thanks,
you've
man.
Gotten married and had a kid. And, well, no, that's not true. Actually, I feel like in the past few years, it's happened, you know, Steve Byrne.
Yeah.
And, like, Michael Batts. And it's been fun being out here. And, you know, my girlfriend just moved in, and it's been kind of a slow maturation for me. But I've been interested in hearing the perspective, because I felt like I've been out here 16 years and feeling like, particularly for the first 10, it's such a narcissistic business.
Yeah.
And unlike most other careers, like I look at my friends who are still in medicine, where it's like, you know, you could have a job for 30 years at a hospital. And here, every job we have, you know, week to week, you get your
simple
ratings,
sugars.
Your podcast, you're looking
at
it. Yeah,
we're just burnt, we're
and,
like.
And so, you know, you feel this need to constantly focus on it. And I think, you know, sometimes you don't realize to the detriment of your larger well-being as a human. And it's been fun seeing people who've done well and who've had a life.
Thanks, man.
And like, I really salute you for making the move too. Like, I think that's, and like you said, you're not quitting, that you're still doing it. It's
totally.
Just like such a good move for the family. And it's like one of those things that so often we feel so tied being here. And I think it's kind of the thing of, it's like, just, I'm turning my phone off.
Right. It's like what you career. Did in with medicine, where you're just like, if you really live without regrets, that's what got us here in the first place.
Right.
It, like, this wasn't the obvious move.
Right.
Like, back then, I was going to go to law school, and people were like, you're going to lose money.
Right.
And I'm like, I just need to do this right now. I got to do a year of it. And then I was like, I've made the right call. And, like, so I may miss LA. We may come back. But it's like, I know I'd regret it.
You can do that. You can do
that.
That's why I'm going to stop tweeting Delta that I hate them, because they let me do that.
Right.
Well, cool, bud. Yeah, you're the man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good times.